Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Had a wee bit of a mix-up, or perhaps a non-responsiveness, from my guest who was planned to be on today. Planned to have a guy named Dallas Goldbug, I think, and he hasn't shown up as yet. So we have a convenient and, hushed I say, maybe even a better replacement. His name is Peter Jovanovic, otherwise known as Professor Ozone, and oh dear me, do people really need to know what is going down with Ozone to be sure? Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vinny. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. I'm glad to hear you, a smile on your face.
Thank you.
Yes. Hey, now, one of the interesting things I've found about Ozone, before I ask you to introduce yourself, is that it's a really great alternative for cleaning your spa pools and stuff like that instead of chlorine. You know that?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. All right, well, anyway, go right ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
Well, we're based out of Malaysia right now. We do a process of ozonation. It's an advanced process. It's called EBU, stands for extracorporeal blood oxygenation and ozonation, or commonly referred to in North America as recirculatory hemoperfusion. What can I tell you? We do the testing. We do the certification for that. We do the equipment for that. We've been doing this for about 20 years now. 13 years of it in clinical research.
And what have you found in that long a period of time? I mean, what would necessitate actually studying something for that?
Well, we found that it takes care of a lot of medical problems that that cannot be taken care of by the medical fraternity, I guess you would say. So we found that we have a lot of objections. We found that we have a lot of detractors, but needless to say, we're continuing and we're going on. It's very well accepted out here in Asia.
Well, in fact, there's a medical tourism type thing going down now. In fact, New Zealanders and Americans that I've heard of that are actually traveling to Asia specifically to receive ozone therapy. What would necessitate somebody traveling such a great distance to get a treatment?
Well, the cost is generally less. I mean, the problem, though, is that they're not covered by insurance, and normally people do not understand how much it costs to do medical treatment. So to some of them, it's quite rather expensive, but to those that understand what medical treatment is and how much it is, they're quite amused at the price of it. And the other thing is these are diseases that are classified as incurable, So really, if somebody is suffering, you take Lyme disease, for instance, right? Lyme disease is a big thing now. It's what they call it? They call it the next tsunami in the United States.
And wasn't that the disease that kind of got released off of some kind of island research facility on the military background in the United States? They were like injecting what are they, like ticks or something like
that?
Well,
that's the story. So and Lyme disease is running rampant. I mean, it's from Lyme, Connecticut. I believe it's Lyme, Connecticut. I can't remember now. It's I have it here. It's where is it? Lyme, Connecticut is where it was first the first incidence of Lyme. And most of these people, I mean, you know, doctors really don't understand Lyme, and they don't understand what's going on with it, so they really don't know what to say. And you know,
It's probably because then they don't have any experience in biological weapons development.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. And
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but I know what it is because I made it in a lab to kill people.
So they misdiagnose that it's fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, ALS, Parkinson's. You know, I mean, they misdiagnose everything because they don't understand it. And it seems that they're not willing to understand it. They're not, they're not going into research. But before we get into that, let me say something about. Can I say something about doctors, Vinny?
You can say something about whatever you like, mate. It's your place.
I understand them in a sense because of the economy, the way everything is. You know, I mean, doctors really have no time. I mean, there's a 3-minute rule. Do you know about the 3-minute rule?
Is that after a doctor like drops a hamburger on the floor, how long he can take to eat it?
No, it's how long he has to see a patient.
Oh,
so I can understand that they're busy, that they're tied up, but it really, you know, and for the most part, you know, you've got a lot of doctors out there that are trying desperately to, you know, hopefully they got into being a doctor to cure people or to, you know, to help people. So hopefully they'll come around, you know. But doctors have it pretty rough. So let's not bash them, really. I've seen a lot of good doctors out there. I've seen a lot of good people. But
the irony, though. Although you do see a lot of good doctors, you see way more like douchebag doctors.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's I wish they would come around and start thinking about what they're doing and thinking about how it is really and take their time. Properly diagnose, properly, you know, do the right thing, right?
It's not part of the training, though, is it? I mean, how many doctors even have even modicum amount of training in say, like, nutrition? Barely any of them.
You're absolutely right, yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, they laugh when some patients come into them and say, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and, nutritionally, I'm taking vitamins. What are you taking vitamins for, you know? I mean, the whole thing is just, the way we see it, I mean, the way we do things in our clinic, we treat everybody as individual. We take our time. We test, you know what I mean? And, we treat them the way that they're supposed to be treated. So, and this is what we're trying to project out there. I mean, we're doing a lot of training now with doctors. I mean, it's a 40-hour course with us. So it's quite an intense course. And we're affiliated with the University of Natural Medicine out of the United States now. So, you know, they're running our courses and they do the certification for us.
Well, that's ironic, though. If you've got a university in the United States that's supporting you and doing all of that, how come you can't do your practice and the ozone therapy in the United States?
Which version do you want?
I want the truth.
Well, nobody really knows the truth. I mean, people say that it's because of the pharmaceutical influence. And then other people say it's because there's no conclusive proof. But the conclusive proof that they want for us to do it would cost us $500,000, $1 million. And who's got that? You know,
the pharmaceutical companies do.
Exactly. And they're not going to back us. You know, if
well, no, because you'd put them out of business. What do they operate on? Like 5-10% success rates? They market drugs based on that.
Yeah. So that's really where the you know, I mean, that's the quagmire, right? You know, we can't go this way, we can't go that way. So we're just, you know, as more and more people start using all that, I think it's now, what is it, in Germany, I think 17,000 physicians use ozone in Germany. And God knows how many in Russia, because they've been doing it for 30 years now in Russia. They've got schools, they've got all kinds of things going on, you know, Cuba. But, you know, that's what it is, you know, all those Cubans, all those Russians, right? So the Americans really don't believe in the Russians and the Cubans, even though they're a little bit more progressive, right?
Yeah.
So and they're asking for proof, and I keep telling them, look, on PubMed, there's 22,000 articles. I mean, we have stacks and stacks of articles on ozone, but, you know, yet still the pharmaceuticals and doctors say, nope, not enough proof. We had a gentleman actually come. Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
We had a gentleman come a while ago, and he had Lyme disease. And this guy was he was everywhere. I mean, he went all over the place searching. I mean, he was okay with he certainly wasn't rich, but he was okay financially. He went to doctor upon doctor upon doctor, and they kept misdiagnosing, and then the story was that he was in he was basically crawling around on the ground because he was that sick. He was taking 90 pills a day over the course of, I think, 10 years, 80,000 pills. I mean, that's got to hurt somebody, you know? And when he came to us, he was walking with a cane, couldn't even walk. I mean, couldn't breathe. I mean, he had COPD. He had heart problems. He had, all kinds of things, associated with his Lyme, as well as Lyme. We managed to clear him within... I think 4 to 6 weeks, we managed to clear him. He was walking upright. He was strong, upper body strength. Everything was okay. Went back to the States, got tested. They still don't believe it. Do you know what I mean? This is the kind of thing that we're up against. They won't believe.
They won't believe, okay? They won't even believe their own eyes, They'll sit there and watch a patient get a transfusion, watch the blood go from this black, disgusting, virtually like fuel oil coming out of their veins, and it goes back in this rich, cherry, beautiful, oxygenated red, and they go, it's just transmutation, it's witchcraft, it's sorcery!
Yeah, sorcery. That's what it is. Sorcery. they keep saying that they watch. Have you watched the videos at all, Vinny? Did you see any of the videos that I put up?
I've seen a fair amount on ozone itself, and as far as I know, it's just something that pretty much destroys virtually any pathogenic bacteria or virus, and also gets chemicals and bad stuff out of it, basically. Right. And what's the problem with the human condition right now is that virtually all blood-borne diseases and things that are allegedly incurable are basically just the result of really dirty blood. And once you get your blood all cleaned up, so do those diseases.
Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it?
Yeah, and of course, because it's simple, doctors won't believe it.
Of course. The one thing that this therapy does wonders for is heart disease. Because of, the blood and the heart are, together. So it's, and this is what I get when I show the videos of the plaque going through the lines. The plaque gets, we take care of the plaque in the body. I mean, we've had people with three-vessel disease and left main involvement. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's basically you can't even do surgery on these people because they're so blocked. And we've been able to unblock their veins. I mean, it's endless what this stuff can do. But we need help on the research. You know what I mean? You can't do it. It's like pharmaceuticals will just not allow it. Will not finance it. We need universities. We need if we're ever going to do anything with this.
Well. I think the bar has been set at a very strange level. Here's the concept. Okay, I've got a treatment that works, and it works on virtually every single patient that I treat. Although this treatment hasn't gone to a university and spent millions of dollars confirming through alleged scientific testing and verification and all of that, that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. It just means that the people who would finance something to such a degree stand to lose from ozone being introduced as a mainstream treatment for everybody. Because, hey, if you could rid yourself of a heck of a lot of diseases, that means that anybody who currently provides treatment programs for those diseases that are at the same or even slightly less effective at it would have experienced basically a competitive threat. And in the modern world, what I find happens is when anybody has a competitive threat, that whole competitive spirit of I'm going to do the best thing has been thrown to the side to I'm going to protect my incredibly inefficient inefficient, incredibly expensive BS drugs that I'm going to pump through people's freaking bloodstream. And if anybody threatens my enormous $1 billion profit margin this year, I'm going to take them to court. I'm going to take them to the FDA. I'm going to send in heavies to confiscate their research and ransack their offices, burn down their labs. Goodness knows what. There is a heck of a lot of a suppression syndrome going down. And, depending on the varying degrees of success that you have and how much support and how much public awareness there is, determines how much of a backlash you'll really receive from these what I call the scumbaggery element.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need public support, actually. We need a grassroots movement. I mean, that's the only way to get this across. I mean, the more people that know, more doctors that are dedicated to the profession that know, the better that it's going to become. People used to ask me, why don't I go see a top cardiologist, or why don't I talk to these top cardiologists if we can get rid of heart disease that easy? And I said, these cardiologists are making, what, $1 million, $2 million a year? I'm going to go in there and say, okay, I've got a little machine that's going to cut down your profit margin. You're only going to make $100,000 a year, but you're going to cure a lot of people. Do you know what he's going to say to me?
He's going to say, I don't want to stop the repayments on my Porsche.
Exactly. So that's really where we're at. I mean, it's not, and I hate to say that about, of course, it's not all doctors,
but we'll elaborate on this more a little bit after the break. My very special guest is Professor Ozone, coming at us live from a giant Transylvanian castle with huge lightning rods up the top that he powers his incredibly evil Professor Ozone machines. We'll be right back.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkeley water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkeley banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models: a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all, at all, at all. Yeah, you know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant, because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
BusinessAmerica.com reports gold prices rushed above $625 an ounce on bargain hunting in a weaker dollar today. Gold last traded at $1,632 an ounce, silver at $2,994. Well, I see the new Kansas City Fed president is worried about instability of the Fed policy, and author and futurist Lowell Ponte thinks we must put the golden handcuffs back on politicians. He was a guest on a Butler on Business radio show today. Lowell reminded Atlanta listeners that since Richard Nixon took the U.S. dollar off the gold standard, the cost of living is now 40 times higher than it was in 1971, and that's as measured in relation to the price of gold. This inflation deception is clearly seen in higher prices, although it's masked by higher income, says Ponte. Face it, warns Ponte, politicians will never stop going in debt. Perhaps the best we can do is slow them down. We should expect massive taxation and massive inflation. More at SwissAmerica.com or toll free at 800-289-2646.
You're listening to the Future of Talk. American Freedom Radio. This is American Freedom Radio.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out with me, John Zaskoda, on Stranger Advice, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on American Freedom Radio. Radio.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Transylvanian Chateau de Rothschild, just across the cavernous crevasse from the Professor Ozone's Frankensteinian lab, where he is creating some description of Van Helsing resistant monster. Welcome back, Peter.
Ooh, I like that. Van Helsing resistant monster. It's a good one. Thank you, Vinny.
Speaking of Van Helsing resistant monsters, the FDA, and I feel that this is basically just it's a monstrous cacophony, basically. All these approval panels and the way that drugs actually get the green light doesn't make any sense, unless, of course, you're a sociopath. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah, there, somebody was telling me about FDA, and they were asking me, FDA approval, and I sent them a list. It's somewhere on the internet. There's a list of FDA failures. They really don't have a good record when it comes to approving anything anyway.
Do they have a list of actual successes? I don't think so.
No. And the other thing that people must understand, and this is something, there was a case in New York, I don't know if you heard about that. You remember Robert Atkins?
The Atkins diet?
Yeah, the Atkins diet guy. He was doing ozone in New York, and they decided to sue him for it, or the medical association decided to take his license, I can't remember. Anyway, the thing went to court. It cost Atkins about $1 million. The findings of the judge, I mean, the judge threw it out, and the reason why the judge threw it out was, you know, and we've got to remember two things here. What the judge said was that the FDA has no jurisdiction over what machine is used and what machine isn't used. You know, hallelujah for that judge. The second thing that he said is that the person that came to Atkins was in their right mind. They understood what they were doing. He didn't grab them off the street. And the healing factor between a doctor and a patient should remain between a doctor and a patient. If they agree with each other, then they should be allowed to use whatever is necessary to heal that patient. That was a huge coup for everybody. But it seems like even though that's what the judge said, it's not going like that. You know, the FDA still harasses. So again, you know, somebody has to spend $1 million and take it to court, and nobody's willing to do that. Just like I said, $1 million to do the research. I mean, it's all $1 million. Everything is $1 million. You know, who's got that?
You can't make $1 million keeping people healthy, because healthy people don't need you anymore.
That's the other key. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Once they're healthy, they seem to disappear. I mean, not all of them. I mean, we still have, I still have contact with a lot of people. But, for the most part, I mean, you know, they're drained. I mean, you know, when they come to us, they're, you know, they've exhausted all their resources. They don't have anything left. You know, they're spending their last buck on getting themselves well. Once they get themselves well, you know, they've got to recoup all their money. Because, these people go to, you know, various doctors, various healers, and, you know, they try this, they try that, and nothing works, you know. And in the meantime, they spend all their money, and then they come, you know, they're flat broke, they've got nothing, they're on Social Security. You know what I mean?
Ironically, that's the doctor's argument. Ironically, that's the doctor's argument for not trying any alternative treatments, is that a whole bunch of people, you'll go around and you'll see this specialist, that specialist, and this one, and that one, and whatever, and by the time you actually wind up running out of money, they wouldn't have healed you, kind of thing. And that's the kind of general argument. Just take these incredibly dangerous pharmaceutical drugs that will make you stop feeling anything, and that will make you feel better actually feeling bad right now, as opposed to actually targeting the disease, let alone diagnosing what it actually is and then getting rid of it.
Yeah, and that's, you're absolutely right. The diagnosis is the most important part, because I'm saying this. I'm not saying this because I'm in this field. I'm saying this because I know it to be true. Before I started doing this 20 years ago, I had I had doctors myself, and what frustrated me about it was that when they go and they test your blood, they never tell you if something is really wacky, they're going to call you and tell you. But if it's within the averages, they won't tell you anything. They don't even call you. And then you call them and you say, how did my blood reports go? And they say, fine. That's not the way it is. You know, I mean, blood reports are very specific. They're not, you know, there's a variable, and they use that variable, you know, from two. They use that as a variable of being normal. But that's not necessarily true. There's high highs, there's low highs, there's, you know, I mean, all kinds of things. And you have to put those into perspective and understand what's going on with the body. And they don't take the time to do that. Now, again, it goes back to that 3-minute rule. Maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they're being forced and pushed and they don't really have the time to do that. But that's the way it should be, you know?
It's like any other employee, really. You know, your boss wants you to do something that you simply don't have time to do, and basically, in order to get the orders accomplished, you have to basically make the quality of your work much less. You know, you got two choices here. Whether or not you're a doctor, you can either do the job right, or you can just do what your minimum requirements are.
But don't you think that's sad when you're dealing with health issues, when you're dealing with people that are sick and they're, you know?
Perhaps doctors rationalize that because I spent 7 years in university learning everything except nutrition, which will stop people from coming to see me in the first place, that they're only entitled to 3 minutes of my time.
You think?
Maybe. I don't know. It's just pure theory on my part.
Do you think the world's really coming to that?
The thing is, you're talking about external influencing factors, right? You know, like, for example, if somebody's giving you abuse, you know, like verbal abuse or whatever, and they're not your employer, you just go block on Skype or Facebook or whatever, and you never hear that person from that person again, you know? It's prioritizing. If they're not a source of money for you, you don't have to put up with any of that kind of stuff. You don't have to change what you're doing when they start to go kind of sour. You can just leave them alone. You can get rid of them. Whereas that's a degree of freedom that I feel that most employees, regardless of their profession, simply do not have.
We have when we admit a patient, when we have a patient come to us, it takes us approximately, I would say, 2 weeks to analyze everything correctly, and we do it daily. So, to defend the doctors, I guess they really do not have 2 weeks with each patient. Hmm. If all things were good, they should have 2 weeks with each patient. Do you know what I mean?
So logically, you know, if you go into your doctor, ladies and gentlemen, who do you think is going to give you a better analysis of what's actually going on with your body and what's maybe perhaps wrong with you? The guy who spends 2 weeks studying you or the guy who spends 3 minutes?
But you have to, Vinny. That's the whole point. You have to understand everything about the body. You can't just, you know, you can't just take one. You know, you've got to do the general testing, then you've got to go into detail. I mean, there's always detail, and you've got to understand what's going on, you know, everywhere inside you. It's not it's not really complicated because it's all science. And if you follow science to, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I mean, it's relatively easy. It's not that difficult, you know?
What? It's strange. The things that aren't that difficult seem to be almost lacking, right? I remember seeing a video yesterday, and I feel sorry for the Americans, man, because this video was asking Americans just very simple question, you know, like where is Iran on the world map, and and it saddened everybody because they didn't even know who the current vice president of the United States was.
I saw that video.
I'm in New Zealand. It was Joe Biden. That's pretty straightforward. You know, who's the president of Iran? It's Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Okay, you know, simple. But the vast amount of Americans have no idea. Okay, so how are they capable of voting for anything that's actually relevant? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there was somebody who proposed an IQ test before outside voting booths, and then I was saying, well, what do you want, man? Do you want like a 2% minority doing all the voting for you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's sad, man.
I like the way that Whoopi calls the president of Iraq. I'm a dinner jacket. I always remember that. The way she said it, I always remember the name that way.
Yeah. And you can tell I'm a dimmer jacket by his cufflinks.
Yep.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about the other real technical side of things because you're Professor Ozone and whatnot. So how does it technically work, ozone? Okay, what is it, first of all, for those who just completely have no idea about it whatsoever?
Disinfectant. I try not to get too technical on these shows because people don't understand too much. It's basically what you've got is you've got three molecules, and these three molecules, two of them are oxygen, and one is the renegade. This is the way I explain it so people can understand it. This renegade molecule is always looking for a mate. So when this renegade molecule goes into the bloodstream, it's binging and banging around to all the cells. When it sees a cell that is has an antioxidant coating, which all normal cells do, it just bounces right off it because oxidant and antioxidant, right? But typically, all the cells that are parasitical, fungal, bacterial, viral, they all do not have that coating. So, in essence, what happens is they implode. Both of them hit each other and just destroy. And this is where you get the action of ozone. I mean, there's so much that ozone does. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, you start talking about it, it's just huge. You know, there's a whole list. I believe Dr. Schellenberger put up a list of what ozone does, and it's, you know, it's just a massive list. The way we do it, what we do is we take ozone, we take blood from one arm and run it through a filter. There's about 0.22 microns. There's not much that can get through to 0.22 microns. We mix the blood with ozone, so it's done on the outside. Ozone mixes with blood very well. It's picked up by the heme and carried. You know what heme is, right? Hemoglobin? Heme?
Right. Can you just briefly explain what exactly is hemoglobin? Because I've heard it many times and people refer to it, but I'm not 100% sure what it is.
It's red blood cell, basically.
Oh, okay. Easy peasy.
It's picked up by the heme and it's carried and it's converted. The ozone is converted to hydroxyls, peroxyls, and it starts its process. And this is why you get the blood that color. But the other part of it is that we're able to extract uric acid, cholesterol, What else? I mean, all sorts of things out of the blood. And there's you get about anywhere from 200 mils to a liter and a half of junk coming out of the blood that goes out of the machine. So it's relatively a filtering or a purification of the blood. You know, and once you start purifying the blood, people understand. Once they always ask me questions like, "Well, it doesn't get to the all parts of the body." Well, yes, it does, because blood is everywhere. There is no part in the body where you won't find red blood cells.
Exactly. And if you don't believe that, stab yourself somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, even in your bone marrow. I mean, it'll get to the bone marrow. It just takes time. And this is why I think this is what I wanted to bring up. The fact of healing, and this is what people don't understand. We're all used to doing a magic bullet. We're all used to, take a pill. We're all used to this kind of thing. Healing takes a long time. For your body to heal, it's not going to be a process that's overnight. You know, I always tell people, they call me, they say, "Well, can I get one treatment and it'll work?" And I said, "No, one treatment's not going to do anything." You know, you have to go through the process. And the process, normally with us, it's a lot faster because of what we do. I mean, we treat, 3 to 4 liters of blood at a time. Whereas other methods of ozone only treat, 200 mils, 400 mils, or so on. So we do it a lot faster. Our treatment usually anywhere from 1 to 3 months, unless it's cancer. Cancer is, ridiculously long. But 1 to 3 months is usually our treatment regime. You see results within 6 weeks. I mean, you can see results. Things happen within about 6 weeks. So it's, but still, 6 weeks it takes because the body's not used to being pushed. You know, most of these diseases that have come up, these people have been with these diseases for 10 years, 5 years, you know what I mean? They're not just diseases that come up, all of a sudden. Heart disease.
So it's kind of like a disease accumulator. Like, have you known a hoarder, somebody whose house is just completely full of crap, and then you come in one day and you're like, "You know what? I'm going to clean this." And you go hard out, and then by the end of the first day you're like, "Man, this is actually going to take a wee while because it's taken a very long time to accumulate all this junk." Yeah?
That's what I use, actually. Usually when I try to explain it to people, it's exactly what I say. It's a hoarder with a house, and you have to clean the house out first, then you have to repaint the walls, then you have to, put the furniture back. I mean, it takes a while. It's not a process. And anybody that's doing it fast is doing it wrong. Because it's either you're just covering it up, or you're pushing it back, it'll come back. You know, I mean, you've got to do it, you've got to get rid of whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Take the Dark Lord of the Sith approach.
Wipe them out. All of them.
You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Professor Ozone, Peter Jovanovic. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and americanfreedomradio.com. Please join us in the chat room there at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Thank you very much. Back in a moment.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserves the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know that we are tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want.
SwissAmerica.com reports gold prices steadied above $1,600 on a weaker dollar as investors pondered economic data. Gold last traded at $1,609 an ounce. James Bullard, president of the St. Louis Fed, told Bloomberg last week the Fed was very close to its inflation target, reports Bill Fleckenstein at MSN Money. But Bill ponders, knowing the government is doing the calculating, what a complete joke the consumer price index is in capturing the true cost of living. Is there any doubt how this experiment will end? Do people really think that while the Fed has a printing press, the inflation rate has any chance of having a minus sign in front of it? Will the Eurozone crack up before the European Central Bank panic, or will the ECB panic first? We'll just have to see. But in the end, all roads lead to money printing, debased currencies, and inflation, writes Bill, until the printing press is taken away. More at SwissAmerica.com. Call now, 800-289-2646. That's 800-BUYCOIN.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Your life as it has been is over.
Radio Free Humanity on AFR. Listen to the Paradigm Shift, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Central.
Some kind of way out of here.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
There's too much confusion.
The Vinny Eastwood Show.
Love that song.
Live from New Zealand, live from the future. There's got to be some kind of way out of here, said Professor Ozone to the FDA. And we talked about how, you know, the disease accumulation basically is not entirely dissimilar from how a hoarder accumulates stuff inside their house. You're accumulating disease, toxins, etc. in your body. And this is what people mistake as the signs of aging, okay, basically.
Yeah.
It's just you're not aging. You're just becoming more toxified day by day, okay? Are you drinking Coca-Cola? Are you drinking coffee? Are you smoking cigarettes? Are you in a job that's really stressful? You know, do you have kids that that bring diseases home with them from the FDA government labs? You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that basically happens to you just in the course of normal everyday life these days that are more or less just bathing yourself in toxins for an extended period of time. And anybody who's foolish enough to think that there is a silver bullet for such a huge mass of effect on your body is basically just kidding themselves and believing somebody who's just basically selling them snake oil.
Yeah, yeah. Not to mention the GMOs.
Oh, yeah.
Irradiated food and you know, the air, you know, in the United States is very toxic. I mean, we get improvements for people. It's really funny when they come over here. Malaysia is a very interesting place. There's nothing going on here. There's no tornadoes, I mean, there's no kind of weather abnormality here. And it rains every day, so the smog doesn't get a chance to build up, right? And as soon as they come here and they start eating, and also they don't believe in GMOs here, so their food is very, how would you say it, very particular to them. They're all about food here. So people start to get better just by eating the food and breathing the air here, you know? That really tells me a lot, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, how many chemtrails do you have there?
Not many. I don't see many around, you know, really, tell you the truth.
Well, that sounds nice. You must have a few less cases of Morgellons disease to deal with.
There's, you know, what's quite funny here is we have deer here, but we have no Lyme. We have, you know, Morgellons. I never hear of it here. The major thing here is, you know, particular to Malaysians, is normally heart disease, high blood pressure. You know, because they eat a lot of rice, they eat a lot of, you know, they eat a lot of fats. I mean, their breakfast is usually a mound of rice and, you know, oil and stuff. So that's really, you know, the typical Malaysian, that's really what they come in for. They come in to get themselves cleaned out. Diabetes, you know, but nothing really, you know, huge. You know, I mean, some cancers, but it's not, you know, like it is in the United States. I mean, I really don't know about the United States, you know. I mean, I was there, you know, for 9 years and just, it's just sad. Just sad what's going on. I mean, you know, millions and millions and millions of people affected, more and more every day. You know, I don't know what's going to happen to that place.
Well, see, you know, and it just comes down to the fact that, as I mentioned before, no silver bullet. You know, it's not like you can cure Lyme disease by having some tequila and salt with it, you know, kind of thing. Right.
These are quite serious pathogens. I mean, they try to get rid of them with antibiotics. And I mean, you know, these bugs, they just spit on antibiotics. You know what I mean? And the other thing that people have to understand is that it's okay. Antibiotics will take care of, maybe they will take care of the body, but what's going to get past the blood-brain barrier? And these parasites, they like to hide in the brain, you know? So ozone gets through the blood-brain barrier, and this is what I typically tell them. I mean, there's nothing and nowhere a bug can hide. It just doesn't occur. You know, eventually it's going to die. It's like the, you know, they would ask me how to explain it. You remember the Raid commercial? Do you have the Raid commercial over there, Vinny, in New Zealand?
Well, we have Raid commercials, yeah, and the first thing that comes to mind when anybody mentions Fyspay or anything like that is... breast cancer.
Yeah, but the Raid commercial is typically, you know, the bugs look at, you know, when there's smog and they say, Raid, you know, and they run away. And this is exactly what happens with ozone, right? Yeah. It's either they have to leave the host or they die. Once the body is ozonated enough, they can't stand it. They can't sit, you know, they won't be able to live in it. And that's really the key, you know. I mean, if you're going to get rid of any kind of parasitical involvement, I mean, you have to make the host unhospitable.
I think the same approach should be taken towards government.
There you go. I like that even better. Yes.
Well, see, they are a parasite, as far as I'm concerned, and we are allowing them an environment to breed.
Well... You know, if you're going to get into government, most people in the United States and Canada do not understand that they have rights that have been given to them on birth. And most of them don't understand that they can exercise those rights. And the government seems to have a way of telling them that their rights are given to them by the government. That's not true. You have God-given rights, but people don't exercise those rights, you know?
And people don't exercise at all either.
Yeah, that's that too. But the you know, if they were to exercise their rights, I mean, all this would. In a perfect world, all this would go away. You know, we wouldn't have all the disease. We wouldn't have all this going on, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. And if people try to take them away from you and you don't defend them, then you lose them basically for good.
Well, nobody can take them away from you, though, Vinny. That's the whole point.
Well, that's not true. Somebody with a pair of fisticuffs and an AK-47 can certainly take away your rights. They can take away your right to life, your right to liberty, and now through the NDAA, you can even be detained without trial and held indefinitely. You know, you just disappear into a black hole. And hey,
how did that get through?
on New Year's Eve while nobody was watching. That's how they always do it, you know. It's just like, hey, we've got this incredibly bad piece of draconian legislation that everybody's hate. Let's pass it during a time in which everybody's with their family who they really love. That way nobody will notice.
Unbelievable, eh?
Oh, it's totally believable, especially... Because that's the standard operating procedure, don't you think? You know, every single time that they've got something that people don't want, you know, whether it be the Federal Reserve Act or the NDAA, New Zealand here, we've got this Codex Alimentarius Food Bill and Search and Surveillance Bills, basically like Patriot Act 2 on steroids type thing. They always pass them during the holiday season when like about 80% of the politicians are away on holiday, and it's only the hardcore, extreme, I want to enslave everybody and enrich myself for my globalist masters type politicians that stay behind, you know, because obviously they don't have any families. And if they did, you know, they'd just be like, bro, look, this is what you gave me for a Christmas present. The right to be detained without trial.
We got coal.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they didn't even do the courtesy of wrapping it up or putting a ribbon on it, man. You know, it's disrespectful.
Yeah. No dinner, no movie.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes straight to the shafting.
That's right. Straight to the shafting.
And look, this is the modus operandi of virtually every sector, you know. It's almost like the world is a web, and at the center of that web is like the ultimate in decision-making processes, the people in the very high-level organizations, etc., that make all these big decisions which nobody is allowed to understand or read the bills before we pass them or anything like that, because that just wouldn't be efficient, you know. Why would you want to be completely informed about stuff before you wind up taking it? That's just silly.
That's right. So do you think there's a way out with grassroots movement, Vinny?
I think it's the only way out, but to a large degree, it's never been a grassroots, incredibly large majority that ever makes a difference. It's always the small, determined minority working constantly day after day for a better world that has, in history, proven to be the only changing force that has ever existed or ever will. So never worry about how many people you have supporting you. Just imagine the smallest group of them who work the hardest, and they'll be the ones that are actually the clincher.
I hope you're right, Vinny, because something's got to happen, you know?
Well, something's got to give, eh? I mean, you can't constantly lie to people forever and say, yes, you're not an adopted child or whatever, and then later on in life you realize that, hey, actually I was adopted. I was adopted in China under this particular thing, and they paid off my parents $3,000 to get rid of me. And then all of a sudden, once you realize the truth, you get incredibly angry and you want to do something about it.
Yeah.
And what actually activated you was something I did want to enter into, but... we don't really have time, unless, of course, you can sum it up in about 20 seconds.
My father died of bone cancer. That was the first part. And I had an ex-wife that had severe fibromyalgia. And I went to see two doctors that couldn't tell her anything but here's some more pills. So I started getting into Chinese medicine. And make a long story short, I got rid of her severe endometriosis with Chinese medicine. That's what started me into natural healing.
All right. Well, I think that's a decent place to leave it there. Thank you very much, Peter. And can you plug your website just before we go?
Ozonehospital.com, Ozone Hospital, Ozone, medicalozone.info, and ozoneuniversity.com. And the YouTube page is Ozone Research.
All right, excellent. Ozone Research on YouTube and various other websites there for you as well. You can listen to the archive of the show, and if you have a sick relative or something of that nature, send them the link to the show, okay? Seriously, because it's when you give people a little bit of information that they may have not been previously exposed to, it can sometimes trigger the healing process because it opens their mind and they'll wind up seeing Professor Ozone and open up their veins. So thank you very much for coming on to us today, and you have yourself a fabulous day.
Thank you. You too, Vinny.
All right. We'll see you after the breakout, ladies and gentlemen.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. Universities destroy knowledge. Governments destroy freedom. The major media destroys information. And religions destroy spirituality. I think there's more to know here.
What you hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. If you know anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank.
BusinessAmerica.com reports gold prices rushed above $625 an ounce on bargain hunting in a weaker dollar today. Gold last traded at $1,632 an ounce, silver at $29.94. Well, I see the new Kansas City Fed president is worried about instability of the Fed policy, and author and futurist Lowell Ponte thinks we must put the golden handcuffs back on politicians. He was a guest on a Butler on Business radio show today. Lowell reminded Atlanta listeners that since Richard Nixon took the U.S. dollar off the gold standard, the cost of living is now 40 times higher than it was in 1971, and that's as measured in relation to the price of gold. This inflation deception is clearly seen in higher prices, although it's masked by higher income, says Ponte. Face it, warns Ponte, politicians will never stop going in debt. Perhaps the best we can do is slow them down. We should expect massive taxation and massive inflation. More at SwissAmerica.com or toll free at 800-289-2646.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, one of the most incredible, fabulous independent radio networks, getting out information that you would never hear in other forums. And we have a very special guest on the line who is in fact an alleged employee of the World Bank, and his name is Branko Milanovic. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and he's on the line now. Branko, welcome to the show.
Well, nice to be there.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I work, as you mentioned, actually, not allegedly, but really, I work for the World Bank, and I work in a research department that has a unit which essentially works with household surveys. And household surveys are really surveys of people in different countries in the world, and people, income, education, age, gender, many other topics. And the topic that I'm interested in is income inequality or income distribution.
So what exactly do you have you found? I mean, in your particular field of research, you've obviously accumulated a lot of data from around the world regarding this topic of economic inequality, to basically just put it in a nutshell, right? So what exactly have been your conclusions based upon the evidence that you've seen about why there is or how much to the extent of economic inequality in the world today?
Right. Now, of course, the first thing to realize is that actually, of course, the issue of economic inequality is an old one. And in terms of data access, we have had about 100 years of data in the advanced countries, in the rich countries, mostly Western Europe and the United States. Actually, in the United States, a little bit less, maybe about 70 or 80 years. Now, what is actually new now is that we are able to extend that to many more countries in the world. For example, until the 1980s, Africa did not have many data on income distribution. China did not have any until 1982. The Soviet Union did not release any data until the fall of the Soviet Union. So we really have now been able to study global inequality, which means that inequality between individuals in the world. So no longer only individuals in the United States or Australia or, England or France. Now we can actually study inequality in the world. And there, and I will be very brief, there are basically two major messages. One of them is that global inequality, which means the inequality among all citizens in the world, is extremely high, so it's actually much higher than inequality in countries like Brazil or South Africa, which are, as we all know, very, very unequal. And secondly, that inequality has been at that plateau for quite some time, for probably not from the 1960s until now. And the second point, and it's actually good news, is that because of very high growth rates of China and India, we may be actually now seeing for the first time, probably in history, I mean, at least after the Industrial Revolution, a slight decline in global inequality.
A slight decline? Well, that sounds really ironic because we've got these things like the Occupy Wall Street protests and huge amounts of unemployment in the United States and 40 million people on food stamps. How can you say that inequality is declining?
You have to keep in mind that we are talking about, well, for instance, the examples that you gave are the examples about inequality within the United States. And inequality within the United States has increased really rather rapidly in the 1990s and has essentially been either stagnant or has risen further slightly in the 2000s. So that's about the inequality in the U.S.
Before you continue, what do you attribute to behind that rise in inequality in the United States? You said it was a very rapid rise.
It's a very rapid rise, and actually it is, even in historical proportions, it is rapid and very strong and large increase. Now, there are three theories, and it's not my own. It's actually based on many people's research. There are actually basically three theories what is behind that rise. One of them says what has happened is there was a technological progress, exemplified, for example, by, IT technologies and others, that essentially meant that more skilled people are getting more income. In other words, there is a sort of complementarity between that type of technological progress and, I suppose, IT and very smart or well-educated people. So that's one theory. Basically, technological progress leads to an increase in wage differentials between people who have only, you know, completed high school and others who have, like, went to colleges or PhDs and so on. The second theory is globalization. U.S. became more open. China started really exporting a lot. That led to the decline in middle-class jobs in the United States, and that actually increased inequality. And the third explanation is more sociological, saying there was a really change in social norms, and now CEOs, as we know, make much more money compared to the workers than they did in the past. And I should not forget the fourth theory, actually, and it's an important one, is the role of the state, because as we know, marginal tax rates have declined in the United States over the last 25 years, and that means that really rich people pay less in taxes than they would have paid otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you attribute any of that to perhaps purposeful tax evasion, tax havens, for example, Cayman Islands, Swiss banks, etc.?
Yes, actually, that's a very good point. Globalization, obviously, it has made ability for people to hide incomes and to evade incomes and, of course, hire very fancy tax specialists, quote-unquote, who are able to find the most profitable ways to evade taxes. Now, these opportunities have really tremendously increased with globalization, and we actually have some estimates about the amount of, I actually don't have it with me now because that's obviously not my area, but with their estimates of large amounts of money which have then evaded taxation, not only in the U.S. but in other countries in the world.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. We had an activist on the show yesterday, Penny Bright, and there was a working group that was set up by the New Zealand government to talk about how to progress things forward and that kind of thing. And every single person who was on that board was actually, you know, technically looked like a tax evader, a tax dodger, and they compiled this enormous report about revenue sources and streams for the country and all of that. And not one word about how to tackle tax evasion.
Yes, I think that actually it was indeed an important issue. There were several, I read several papers which, you know, as I said before, which tried to put a number on that. And it's a very large number, and I think actually that number is probably going to increase because what basically you can actually argue is happening. People who are high, what is called high net worth individuals, which is essentially people at the extreme who are making more, whose assets, financial assets are more than $30 million US. And then there is a second group of people whose financial assets are more than $10 million US. Now, these people, of course, not only have large financial assets, they have an interest and ability to move these assets around the world as to minimize taxation. Now, if you don't have any financial assets, if your only asset is your labor, and you're working in a company or in a shop or you're self-employed and so on, you obviously don't have that opportunity because your incomes are made in the country where you are located, so you just cannot escape taxation. So what happens is that actually very rich people are more able to escape taxation than the middle class.
We're talking about the obscenely rich, and you talked about the 10 million and the 30 million brackets. When I think about the obscenely rich, I think more along the lines of the billion-dollar bracket, and there's much fewer people that fit into that bracket who are far more involved in tax evasion, I would speculate, just basically because it appears to be self-evident.
Yeah, I agree with that, I think, actually. But you know, again, we don't know necessarily individuals who do that, but what I'm saying is that basically the incentives are large, and you can imagine people with large assets, be it 10 million or 30 million, or, you know, obviously people who have billions, although, you know, the number of such people in the world is relatively limited, they do actually engage in that, I'm sure, because it would be quite... Actually, it would be quite stupid from their point of view not to engage because they have an opportunity to do that. And one of the arguments recently being made was that there should be some kind of a world tax authority in the sense that a body which would essentially try to crack down on such evasion.
But don't you think that if such a body did exist, those people who have those billions of dollars would very much quickly decide that they would invest a lot of money into it so that they could write its legislation, write its laws and doctrines so that it would exclude them?
Well, that's a good point in the sense that I would just take it to go away from this topic more broadly. It is also true, and that was, you know, that point has been made, that the involvement of the very rich in the political process has, you know, increased tremendously in Western European and, you know, North American nations and elsewhere. In other words, that there is much more power of the rich over the political process and legislature than it was the case maybe 30 years ago. So basically, I think you have here two things feeding on each other. You have an increase in inequality, which has happened, whether for the reasons that I mentioned before of technological change or globalization, and then there are more rich people, and these rich people then essentially write the rules of the game that suit them, and that perpetuates their position.
Well, and that's the whole hallmark of any kind of establishment all throughout history, isn't it? Those who have the power use their power to retain their power. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it is pretty straightforward. But it's also true that actually in a democracy you would like to have some control over the ability of the rich to exert power.
Yes, yes. I mean, but the only thing that's capable of, in fact, controlling or reining in somebody who's perhaps either obscenely wealthy or perhaps using the example of a major multinational corporation, the only entity that might possess enough power or clout to actually stand against them, regulate them, etc., would be somebody's government. But the difficulty is because those people now have invested so much money in financing political campaigns, etc., that you could argue that they virtually now own the government.
Well, that's true. It's actually in many respects indirectly or, you know, sometimes quite directly in some countries, they own the government. And what I think was a big surprise, I think, for many people when the recession, the Great Recession, happened, was that in some of the countries that were lecturing others, for example, on crony capitalism, the same process of control or seizure of the state or the power through legislature and sometimes through the executive branch has really happened. But go to a point which you raised earlier just to explain that when you mentioned this contradiction between the fact that there was a rising inequality in most Western nations and in China and Russia and others taken by themselves and a decline, possible decline, I just have to put it like under, you know, sort of a caveat and very cautiously, possible decline in global inequality. Now, the two things are not incompatible. Actually, they go together. The reason why global inequality may be on the decline is because of very high growth rates of China and India. Because if you really think of the fact that there are 2.5 billion people who are very poor, who still are very poor, but whose incomes are increasing very substantially every year, that means that if you look from the global perspective, global inequality may be on the decline.
Well, that seems kind of like a numbers game, you know, like you have, say in New Zealand, you've got 4 million people and they would be, let's say their income increased by $3 a year, okay, it would produce a significant difference, perhaps statistically speaking, and then you have a look at China and India where you've got like coming up on 2.5, 3 billion people, let's say their income was increased by $1 a year, would that make a statistical difference?
Well, it is, you know, everything is a number game, but, you know, one has to realize that behind the numbers, there are real people. So the fact, and I think it's actually a very positive fact, the fact that we have 2.5 billion people, not all of them equally, but some of them not benefiting at all, but we have essentially China and India, these two giants that have grown at relatively sluggish rates of growth in the last, before 1980s or 1990s, now they are growing at the rates of growth which are extremely high. Now, it is true that in absolute amounts, these numbers, because these countries are so poor, the numbers are really very small from the U.S. perspective, and people actually forget, or from New Zealandese perspective or Australian, whatever, but, you know, people forget the U.S. GDP per capita is more than $40,000, and in comparable prices, Chinese is about 8 or 9. So we are talking about the gap of, you know, 5 or almost 6 to 1. But nevertheless, the increase there is substantial in terms of percentages.
Well, you talked about globalization, and that reminds me just basically of free trade deals and NAFTA, GATT. They spring to mind as some of the primary reasons why economic inequality would be rising in the United States, and economic inequality would be declining in China and India, because that's where some of the manufacturing has gone. So essentially what you've done is you've taken the work and the manufacturing capacity of the people of the United States and given it to another country.
Well, you are not given it. It's actually, first, let me just correct you. Inequality in China and India is on the rise. So both inequalities in the U.S. and China, actually Chinese inequality is actually increasing by leaps and bounds, even exceeding the U.S. inequality. And it's not that you have given it. It's actually the fact that these people are willing to do the same job for much less than people in the U.S. or in England or in Australia. So I don't see any... problem with that, because this has been the case in the past. In the past, the U.S. has grown because U.S. laborers, the U.S. workers have been willing to do the same job more cheaply than the English. And that's why they actually have attracted capital and the U.S. has become a rich country. So there is nothing really sort of new there or anything that I believe, should be against, because essentially it is very good for the world that the Chinese are becoming richer.
Indeed, and we'll talk about more of this after the break. My very special guest from the World Bank is Branko Milanovic. Back in a moment, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkeley water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkeley banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserves the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know that we are tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they used to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all, at all, at all. Yeah, you know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on. The fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream. Because you have to be asleep to believe it.
SwissAmerica.com reports gold prices steadied above $1,600 on a weaker dollar as investors pondered economic data. Gold last traded at $1,609 an ounce. James Bullard, president of the St. Louis Fed, told Bloomberg last week the Fed was very close to its inflation target, reports Bill Fleckenstein at MSN Money. But Bill ponders, knowing the government is doing the calculating, what a complete joke the consumer price index is in capturing the true cost of living. Is there any doubt how this experiment will end? Do people really think that while the Fed has a printing press, the inflation rate has any chance of having a minus sign in front of it? Will the Eurozone crack up before the European Central Bank panic, or will the ECB panic first? We'll just have to see. But in the end, all roads lead to money printing, debased currencies, and inflation, writes Bill, until the printing press is taken away. More at SwissAmerica.com. Call now, 800-289-2646. That's 800-BUYCOIN.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out with me, John Zaskoda, on Stranger Advice, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on American Freedom Radio.
Black sunrise, black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know the way it's going to go.
Welcome back.
'Cause we can't see.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that has the three favorite words, I don't know, and the three most hated words, I don't care. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We try to get to the truth on this show here. Whether or not we can handle it, I don't know. But the truth for the truth's sake seems to be the modus operandi. And my very special guest from the World Bank is Branko Milanovic. Welcome back from break, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, one of the elements that I really wanted to get into this interview with you is the issue of debt and just how much there is in the world today and how that might actually be one of the main contributing factors towards economic inequality. What is your perspective on this?
I'm sorry, the issue of BRICS?
Debt.
Well, I didn't know.
Like everybody's loans and interest payments and all those kind of things, because we have a massive debt bubble being pumped up right now. A large percentage of it, I would say, is derivatives trading and just bad debt that kind of seems to be floating out there, like some kind of an island made out of trash.
I cannot really tell you anything about the numbers of that, because what I mentioned before, actually, in household surveys, when you do studies of people's income, you take into account their annual incomes, which is essentially earnings, social security, and all other different social transfers, plus ownership-related incomes. You don't include, and this is not part of that particular survey that I work with, you don't include their assets and liabilities. It's a different issue. This is actually the question of inequality in wealth. Now, it is the fact that actually inequality in wealth has always been historical, and it is now much more unequally distributed than inequality in income. Income is something that you receive over 1 year. Wealth is actually the total stock of assets and liabilities that you have right now. So what has happened is that, of course, inequality in wealth has become even larger than inequality in income. But I cannot really tell you specifically, like today, what is happening to the loans and the foreclosures and bad loans and other things, because this is something that, in terms of data, we will not know for another year at least.
Well, it seems that that would be one of the most important elements in the study of income, is also the outgoings, because obviously we have a debt-based economy in the Western world now. Let's not kid ourselves. Money, when it's printed as debt. It's not printed as a credit, and they don't print the interest
on those loans. So there's never enough money to pay off all the debt. And to my mind, that kind of amounts to almost a magician's trick where they can just basically make the money up and then sit back and collect interest off people in perpetuity because it's impossible to pay it off.
You're actually meaning in this particular case the debt which is owed by individuals, or you mean the debt owed by states?
It would be both, to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I said, it is really in a fiscal issue, which is essentially a macroeconomic issue. So I will not go into that because it's an issue that indirectly, obviously, has a huge impact on income flows or on who is rich and who is poor. But that's not something that you can actually, other than, as I said before, other than in wealth statistics, that you can capture.
Okay. And is there perhaps an identifying measure? Is there perhaps a line that is drawn between economic inequality, between those who basically have virtually zero chance of ever getting a higher income versus mm-hmm. those who have virtually zero chance of ever losing any because they have almost complete control over the economic system to a degree?
Well, you know, that of course, it's another, I think, very pertinent question today because... Well, particularly the latter group, the group of those who have a virtually zero chance of losing, is now become quite obvious, it would seem, because of the bailouts and other things. In other words, as we know, people who were making money while the times were good, of course, were keeping that money for themselves. They were not giving it to the government. But once the times changed, and arguably the times changed for the worse, precisely because of the manipulations and things that these people did. And then, of course, it is then said, they came back to the government and to, you know, taxpayers essentially and said, well, if we are not bailed out, the economy can sink. And basically you socialize the losses and you privatize the profits. So that's not really how things were supposed to function.
Well, that would be not how things are supposed to function in a reasonable, decent, and lawful society, but by a society run by criminals, it seems almost as if that's the only thing that happens.
Well, in a society where essentially the entrepreneurs and those who invest do not have to bear the burden of wrong decisions and to lose money, of course the problems get exacerbated because essentially these people, as I said before, they collect the money for themselves when the times are good and they go back to the taxpayers when they start losing money. So there is really nothing for them. In any case, it's a win-win strategy. So there is no danger of loss. Now, going back to the first part of the question is, are there people who actually do not have a chance to accede and to get higher up? You know, there are what is called longitudinal studies that follow individuals over time. And indeed, of course, there's a number of conditions that we know are associated with an inability in the U.S., but also in many other countries, inability of the people to take full advantage of maybe the opportunities and what they have. And, of course, as you know, these are large families, poor parents, very often racial discrimination, issues of gender, women versus men, place where you were born and where you live, you know. So these are all, I mean, how rich your parents were and so on. So there are all of these factors that influence you. Now, they influence you in the rich nations, but just to make your listeners maybe sort of more aware of that, these same factors are even more important in poor nations, in nations like Brazil or nations like, you know, Uganda or even China. These are really very important factors.
Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between being born poor in the United States means you have a very slim chance of making it up the ladder, whereas being born poor in a poor country, you have no chance, basically, of making it up the ladder. Is that
yeah? That's actually very well put. Yes, that's very well put. You know, in one case, of course, the U.S. and Western Europe are still, in that sense, they do have a certain amount of mobility. That mobility, intergenerational mobility, is not as great as the ideology would make it sound. Actually, as you know, the American dream was based essentially on the idea of intergenerational mobility. In other words, it doesn't matter really where I was born and who were my parents, but I'm able to exceed if I really work hard, I'm smart, I'm lucky, I would be actually rich. So that's based on this mythology of success. Now, we know from the data that that's not exactly the case, but there is still some chance of people making it to the top, or actually going high in the, you know, from a lower social group or income group to a higher. But there are many countries, like say, I suppose, take Pakistan or South Africa or so on, where you really have virtually zero chance of making it.
So can I ask you a little bit something about the World Bank and loans, development, that sort of thing? Does that factor into your area of research at all, World Bank loans that are given to third world economies?
No, it does not, because as I said before, this is a unit which works with household surveys and which works with, you know, individual incomes. And the advantage, of course, of the unit is that you're able to have data from any countries in the world. You know, normally, you will have relatively hard time getting, you know, numbers from, South Africa, or income distribution from India, or income distribution from Argentina. And, of course, the advantage of the World Bank is not that the World Bank does that. The World Bank, through the statistical agencies of those countries, is able to have such data. But it doesn't deal, the research unit that I'm in, it doesn't deal with World Bank lending.
Because I was just curious to see if there was perhaps a link between economic inequality and a country, say a third world country, getting a massive World Bank loan.
Oh, you mean getting a massive World Bank loan? I don't know if there is a link. Obviously, there were some arguments that have been made in the past, in particular with respect to Congo. If you know, you remember when Mobutu was the president of Congo, and it's a country with massive income inequality, where basically it was him and a few people around him who were able to have huge incomes. There were, of course, there was a criticism of the World Bank and the IMF lending, but that was in the 1980s, you know.
And Argentina, for example, very similar circumstance there, where the World Bank would come in, and the ruler of the country was, I think he might have been paid off or something to not repay the loans, and as a direct result, Argentina, which was one of the richest per capita countries in the world at the time, experienced a huge economic downfall because they simply couldn't pay off the massive what you call kind of loan sharking, extortionate rates of interest being charged on them by the World Bank. And
these are not actually, let me just correct it there. The rate of interest of the World Bank are actually very low, and the reasons why the countries go to get the loans is because they are relatively cheap. What is not cheap is that the World Bank loans oftentimes come with conditionality, which means that the World Bank would ask you to do certain things that otherwise maybe you don't want to do. But the rate of interest is very low, and that's why the countries come. The question is actually, and particularly in the case of Argentina, that was not what is called the international financial institutions lendings or loans. These were really commercial banking loans, and Argentina defaulted on that. And actually, some people today, when they look at the situation in Greece, they see Argentina as an example how even a default did not result in a cutoff from the financial market, and how Argentina was able later actually to grow. Argentina is not too many people know, but it's one of the countries that really was not affected by the recession and grew at 7 or 8% per annum, which is much more than the U.S. Like U.S. grows at 1.5% or 2%.
That's quite substantial. And you said that the World Bank loans have conditionalities. It reminds me of the there was a white paper leaked. It was called the 111-point plan, I think it was. Are you familiar with that?
No, I never heard of it.
It's basically an outline. You said about World Bank conditionalities. They include privatization, don't they?
Normally they did, actually. They might include it a little bit less now because there is less to privatize. But, of course, in the past, and particularly with respect to Eastern Europe and also to some Latin American countries, privatization was oftentimes a condition.
And in terms of economic inequality, is there a link between countries that have had a lot of privatization and economic inequality between the people?
Yeah, well, there is no doubt. I mean, if you look at, for example, that's the key group of countries to look at Eastern European, Eastern European countries, in particular Russia and Ukraine. But all of them, you know, there are 28 countries, so we are not talking about two or three, but we're talking about a significant, statistically significant number of countries. There are clear studies that show that privatization was associated with increased inequality. So there is no doubt that if you move from a state-owned economy to a private economy, inequality goes up. Now, of course, you have to offset that against possible gains, because when you privatize, you might lose by becoming more unequal, but you do gain in principle, and I think in fact very often, by becoming more efficient and becoming actually richer. So there is a certain trade-off between wealth and inequality.
Well, there was a Transparency International conference that was attended by a friend of mine, Penny Wright, and they had a look over what was the private contracting sector versus government-owned, state-owned enterprises, where they have their economic activity kind of done in-house. And the conclusion was that the contracting out model, the more or less the privatization of state services model, wound up being roughly twice as expensive as in-house services. So it becomes fairly self-explanatory that, yes, when you privatize, economic inequality does go up.
This is my sort of a personal view, but I actually would agree with you that privatization of public services, state services, is quite wasteful and very often leads to higher costs and, in my opinion, very little improvement or maybe no improvement, and in some cases actually deterioration in delivery, in quality of the goods. So in other words, the privatization, in my opinion, privatization of water, electricity, education, health, and all that has not really worked well. On the other hand, if you look at, again, to look at China or Eastern European examples, privatization of what is called tradable goods is basically things that are being produced that you can feel and see. It's like if you privatize production of computers or telephones or shoes or socks or T-shirts, there are clearly, I think, improvements in productivity and wealth.
Yeah, because they're non-essential services, but for the basics of life, like water, electricity, food, and things of that nature, having people having a supportive dragnet kind of thing, as opposed to being owned exclusively and operated by multinational corporations who have no loyalty to any flag or country or people, doesn't seem to make sense. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. Blue Shield comes in three models: a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about Blue Shield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Blue Shield banner. Blue Shield, brought to you by the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want.
America.com reports gold prices rushed above $625 an ounce on bargain hunting in a weaker dollar today. Gold last traded at $1,632 an ounce, silver at $29.94. Well, I see the new Kansas City Fed president is worried about instability of the Fed policy, and author and futurist Lowell Ponte thinks we must put the golden handcuffs back on politicians. He was a guest on a Butler on Business radio show today. Lowell reminded Atlanta listeners that since Richard Nixon took the U.S. dollar off the gold standard, the cost of living is now 40 times higher than it was in 1971, and that's as measured in relation to the price of gold. This inflation deception is clearly seen in higher prices, although it's masked by higher income, says Ponte. Face it, warns Ponte, politicians will never stop going in debt. Perhaps the best we can do is slow them down. We should expect massive taxation and massive inflation. More at SwissAmerica.com. We're toll-free at 800-289-2646.
Online, all the time, your gateway to the world.
AFR
American Freedom Radio.
Give it to them.
Your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy is the Vinnie Eastwood Show. In a world so full of madness and chaos, don't lose your sense of humor or you'll go friggin' nuts. Weekdays 5 to 7 Central on American Freedom Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment of today's show. Fastest 2 hours in talk radio. My very special guest from the World Bank is Branko Milanovic. And we've been talking about economic inequality, privatization, and generally the very largest and most important issues of our time have started to become a lot more dependent on economic issues to a degree. And those things that we normally expect to be part of, dictating our daily life, which is whether or not we've got something to eat, somewhere to sleep, or whatever, seem to be taken away from us because of financial inequality, not in spite of it. Branko, what do you think?
Well, I obviously think that the financial crisis, the global financial crisis, has had a tremendous impact on people's incomes. And as we know, the first wave of the crisis affected actually rich people because they lost, they were essentially people with large financial assets, and they lost quite a lot because the stock exchanges went down. But then, as the effect of the crisis spread out and trickled down, the crisis starts affecting, and that has been a typical feature of other financial crises before, starts affecting middle-class people and then poorer people, and of course many more lose jobs. As we know, unemployment rate in Europe and the United States has gone up tremendously. In some countries like Greece and Spain and Portugal, it is almost 20%. In others like the U.S., it's below 10%, but it's much more than it was only like 3 years ago. So clearly, there was a huge impact of the crisis on poverty and possibly on inequality. I just want to explain that actually, if you have an increase in poverty, it does not necessarily mean that you have also an increase in inequality, because you might have many more poor people, but you might also have some losses at the top of the income distribution. But clearly, poverty has increased, as actually you mentioned even before, the fact that there are many more people on food stamps and people who are on unemployment benefits now than before. There is no doubt about that.
Well, we talked about financial terrorism and straight-up criminality as being one of the main factors behind the global financial crisis. This started, in my opinion, with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. Have you heard of that?
Well, this is, of course, financial issues, so I would rather, you know, stay with income distribution. So I would, you know, the fact is, actually, if you go back... and I'm now going to sort of go back much further than the 1980s. A previous very high peak of income inequality in the United States occurred just before the Great Depression. So it is a fact. Now, some people give to this fact a huge importance, others minimize the importance, but I'm just reporting the fact is that actually in 1927, that was a previous peak in global U.S. inequality, and the current peak was in 2007 or 2008. So essentially between these two dates, the inequality in the U.S. went down up to the late 70s and then started rising, as we were saying in the beginning of your show. It started rising in the 80s and the 90s and all the way to 2007.
And that was the time period, interestingly enough, you should mention that exact time period, that the Glass-Steagall Act was in full swing. And what it did is it prevented people from creating more wealth than currently existed. Like, for example, the first Great Depression, as far as my research has been conducted, was the direct result of people basically getting stock market portfolios with only 10% of what that portfolio was worth down, and it had the ability to have those loans called in full. And that's what caused the first Great Depression, is everybody was having a great time. It was the Roaring Twenties. Everybody was making a lot of money on the stock market. And once those loans were called in, that's when you had people jumping from buildings. And after that, to prevent that from happening again, that's when they instituted Glass-Steagall. And then, of course, as you said, that stopped that economic inequality from increasing even further. And then it was in, I think it might have been 96 or 98, that it was repealed. And as you said at the first part of the show, that's actually when the economic inequality of the United States specifically started to increase at a rapid rate. So I see that that direct connection right there between the capacity of creating basically debt out of thin air is the thing that causes the most inequality and causes the most amount of wealth to be consolidated into fewer and fewer hands, those who are the insiders, that kind of thing. Would you agree?
I really cannot tell if there is a causality between these two events. But as I said before, I think the facts are the following, that there was a previous peak in inequality which occurred before the Great Depression, and the next peak occurred around 2007, 2008, before the Great Recession. It's also the fact, and people have pointed this out, so this is not me, it's actually I'm just quoting others, they have pointed out that there was a seemingly fairly high correlation between how well the stock exchange has been doing and how accumulated the financial and overall assets and income are in the hands of 1% or even fewer, that 0.1% of people. So if you look at these two series, there is a fairly high correlation. Now, it's not an area that I work on, and I cannot really tell if the one thing is leading to another, but there is no doubt that these two things are indeed what is called associated. In other words, they seem to move together.
Well, see, that's something that I feel is quite important for people to understand, is that financial power is something that has always been held by a very few amount of hands. So I take the Federal Reserve Bank, for example, a private company that has shareholders and major companies like Goldman Sachs and various other banks and things of that nature. And it comes down to the fact that it is the banks primarily that have the ability to both cause and repudiate any form of financial inequality simply by their practice of how much they loan, how much money they want to make, and what their kind of general economic policy is, particularly if they have control of a country's money supply like the Federal Reserve does.
Well, there is, the fact is that the financial assets historically, and since we have the data, we can actually see that financial assets have been much more concentrated than, for example, labor. I mean, it is obvious that labor is very broadly distributed. You have, of course, people, wages are different, but everybody essentially has to contribute, most people actually have to contribute labor in order to survive. But financial assets have traditionally been very concentrated, and they have become more concentrated now, whether it was because of the legislature and changes in laws, or whether because it was globalization and speed and ability to conduct transactions or to invest in faraway places. That's a different issue. You know, by the way, these issues have also been debated about 100 years ago during the European expansion, particularly in Africa and Asia, and, of course, the increase of financial concentration of financial capital. So these are not everything that we are seeing today is exactly new. There are actually very strong similarities to the situation 100 years ago.
Does this mean that we have not learned, or does that mean that we've been lied to?
Maybe that we have not learned. But obviously there are some people whose interests are not always to tell the whole truth, you know. So, but I think it's actually, you know, we have, people have to learn. I think it was Santayana who said that actually if you don't learn from history, you have to repeat it until you learn it. And unfortunately, in many cases, you know, countries and people have to repeat it several times until they learn it.
Mm. So what do you think is the, we've only got maybe about a minute left in the show today, and thank you very much for coming on. What would be some of the lessons you'd like to leave for the audience and perhaps the governments of the world about how they can decrease economic inequality?
Well, you know, I would say very briefly that actually for that we really dispose of two instruments and of unequal strength. One of them, and political feasibility. One instrument is for global inequality to go down, is faster growth of poor countries. And that's why I'm so bullish, and that's why I actually spoke so favorably of the fact that China and India, with a population, combined population of 2.5 billion people, are growing fast, is such a good news for the world as a globe. The second tool is to reduce inequalities within nations. And this is the inequalities within the United States, within China, within Russia, within UK, and most of the countries in the world where they have increased. And actually, if you look at the last 20 years, they have increased in practically 80% of the countries. So that would be the second tool whereby global inequality would be reduced. So to summarize, one is faster growth of poor countries. Second, less inequality in rich countries.
All right. Well, I think that's a perfect place to leave it. Thank you very much, Branko, for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us today. I very much appreciate it. And you have yourself a fabulous day, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot for inviting me. It was a pleasure. Good night.
You're very welcome. Branko Milanovic, ladies and gentlemen. You can search him up on YouTube. He's done a couple of presentations which are quite lengthy and packed full of very interesting information and statistics where you can learn up on how the global economy is working today with regards to economic inequality. And we're very privileged to have him here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening, particularly those who've stuck it out in the chat room for the duration of the show. And if you want to come around tomorrow, we will be here broadcasting again.